अतत पूर्यमन्दाभिश शालकल्लभिर अमराहनम शीयमन्नाभिश्चा कदाभिः पितृणम् महोरथ्राणि पूर्व पक्षपरा पक्षाभ्यम् पिथन्वानः सर्वजीवने वाह प्राणजीवश्चैकम् एकम् नक्षत्रम् त्रिंशता मुहूर्तार्भुञ्चे. Cha also apuryamanabhihi gradually increasing cha and kulabhihi by the parts of the moon amaranam of the demigods shiyamanabhihi by gradually decreasing cha and kulabhihi by parts of the moon pitrinam of those on the planet known as pitriloka aharatrani the days and nights Purva Paksha Apara Paksha Vyam. The period of waxing and waning. Vitanvanaha. Distributing. Sarvajiva Nivaha. Of the total living entities. Ranaha. The life. Jivaha. The chief living being. Cha, also. Ekam ekam, one after another. Nakshatram, a constellation of stars. Trimshata, by 30. Muhurtai muhurtash. Bhunte, passes through. Translation. When the moon is waxing, that means getting bigger. It's not actually getting bigger, you're seeing more of it. The illuminating portions of it increase daily, thus creating day for the demigods and night for the pitas. When the moon is waning, however, it causes night for the demigods and day for the pitas. In this way, the moon passes through each constellation of stars in 30 muhurtas, an entire day. The moon is the source of nectarian coolness that influences the growth of food grains, and therefore the moon god is considered the life of all living entities. He is consequently called Jiva, the chief living being within the universe. So next text 10. Ayaisha shoda shakala purusho bhagavan mano mayon namayo vrithamayo deva pitri manusha bhuta pashu bhakshi sarishripa virudam pranapyayana shilatvat sarvamaya hiti varnayante.
Because the moon is full of all potentialities, it represents the influence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The moon is the predominating deity of everyone's mind. And therefore, the moon god is called Manomaya. He is also called Anumaya because he gives potency to all herbs and plants. And he's called Amritamaya because he is the source of life for all living entities. The moon pleases the demigods, pitas, human beings, animals, birds, reptiles, trees, plants, and all other living entities. Everyone is satisfied by the presence of the moon. Therefore, the moon is also called Sarva Maya. We could say a few words about this, even though it's not a purport. Everybody knows, or most people know, that people who are crazy are called lunatics. So Luna, of course, is the name of the moon. And those who work in the psychological field are aware that when it's the full moon day, there's more issues. And those who are in charge of temples are also aware of the same thing. We won't talk any more about this. And so the moon, it actually does control the mind. It's somehow or other got a subtle influence. And it also controls the tides. The tides means that when you have the ocean, sometimes it's high tide, and the water can go up by 3 or 4 feet. And I used to, when I was younger, we had a boat, and so you saw the docks had to float in reference to the shore. There was the poles, and then the docks were connected with straps or ropes around those poles. And the docks would go up and down according to the tides, and the tides usually are about 6 hours. And sometimes when the tide would go out, you can see a vast expanse of beach. You can walk on the beach for, several hundred feet. When the tides would come in, then the water would come in and cover the beach. Anyone who's lived on the seashore would understand that. The moon controls the tides, the moon controls your mind, and the moon also gives the, as Krishna says in the Gita, the taste of the vegetables. That's why when people grow vegetables in hothouses, that's greenhouses, during the winter and they use artificial light, then it's not so tasty. It just tastes, just like plastic. It may look good, but it doesn't have so much taste or so much nutrition. So the moon is actually supplying nutrition to the body. I mean, so it's such an important astronomical body for us. And also, it's part of romance, isn't it? I mean, of course, if you're a sannyasi, you talk about these things, it's not appropriate, but, people just like sit under the moon, like look at the moon or whatever, and they say, oh, isn't that a beautiful moon? And, of course, there's a story. There's many stories that are mentioned by the acharyas, specifically Rupa Goswami and the Vidagdha Madhava and Raghunath Das Goswami, how the pastimes of Krishna, especially the rasa dance, occur at the time of the full moon. And of course Krishna has rasa dance at other times, but even when he has it at other times, the moon becomes full just to please him. And Krishna also appears in the moon dynasty. The dynasty coming from the moon. And sometimes Krishna makes a mistake on purpose and he compares Radharani's face to the moon. The reason I say that's a mistake is because the moon appears to have some imperfections. Actually, it doesn't. Prabhupada said this is like a fault-finding mentality. When one looks at the moon and says the moon has some spots in it. But the moon is so wonderful, why should you just find fault? This, of course, is the mentality of someone who is like a fly that is looking for sores or looking for stool rather than for looking for the nice things. And you see this, of course, on the internet. Many people have this mentality. Anyway, so Krishna one time said to Srimati Radharani that your face is beautiful like the moon. And that's praise, and she got really angry. She said, what? You think my face is pockmarked? And she got really angry, and a huff and a puff, she walked away from it. So, anyway, these are some stories about the moon. And of course, nowadays they think, or at least when I was young, we used to think there was a man in the moon. This is a face in the moon. But anyway, some little information about the moon, but it's very important body, and it is also luminescent. That means that, of course, there's some theory that the moon is simply reflecting the sunshine, but that Prabhupada said the moon actually has its own luminescence. It's not simply reflecting. There may be some reflection, too, but the moon is actually effulgent with a very cooling light. And this cooling light is very soothing. And if you go out during the full moon and you just like get some moonshine, you just feel very soothed. Anyway, that's enough about the moon. Yesterday we talked about the distances. So let's go on reading more about our astronomical calculations. Text 11.
Tata uparishta dvi lakshalojanato lakshatrani merum dakshine noiva kalayana ishvara yojatani saha vijitashta vimshatahi.
There are many stars located 200,000 yojanas, 1,600,000 miles above the moon. By the supreme will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Interesting.
They are fixed to the wheel of time, and thus they rotate with Mount Sumeru on their right, their motion being different from that of the sun. There are 28 important stars headed by Abhijit. So Srila Prabhupada explains, the stars referred to herein are 1,600,000 miles above the sun, and thus they are 4 million miles above the earth. Text 12.
Tata uparishtat ushana dvilaksha yojanata upalabhyate purata paschat sahaiva varkshkasya shaigriya manja samyavir gativir arkavacharati lokanam nichadanukula eva prayena varshayam charinanu miyatesa vishti vishtamba grahopashyamanaha.
Some 1,600,000 miles above this group of stars is the planet Venus. That's also a lovely planet, which moves at almost exactly the same pace as the sun according to the swift, slow, and moderate movements. Sometimes Venus moves behind the sun, sometimes in front of the sun, and sometimes along with it. Venus nullifies the influence of planets that are obstacles to rainfall. Consequently, its presence causes rainfall, and it is therefore considered very favorable for all living beings within this universe. This has been accepted by learned scholars. There's one other thing about Venus. It really depends where it is in your horoscope that determines, you know, whether it's favorable or not. But actually, so for example, if a sannyasi has Venus in the house of marriage, it's not favorable. For him, it may be favorable for romance, but it's not favorable for him. So that it really, it's generally a favorable planet. And we're going to be discussing unfavorable planets and sometimes how they're favorable. But it depends on where it is. Or it can also cause problems in the marriage if it's in the wrong house, too. Or if it's aspected. You know, astrology is very, very complex science. Because it just depends on whether it's aspected by other planets in different houses, whether they're trying. Anyway, it's a little complicated to go into their explanation right now. But generally, it's a favorable sign, a favorable planet.
So
text 13.
Ushana sabuddha yakyatas tata uparishta dvilaksha yojanato bhuta samasutta upalabhya manaha prayena shubhakrit yadarkad vyatirichita tadativa tabra prayena vrichyari vayam ashamsate.
Mercury is described to be similar to Venus, in that it moves sometimes behind the sun, sometimes in front of the sun, and sometimes along with it. It is 1,600,000 miles above Venus, or 7,200,000 miles above Earth. Mercury, which is the sun of the moon, is almost always very auspicious for the inhabitants of the universe, but when it does not move along with the sun, it forebodes cyclones, dust, irregular rainfall, and waterless clouds. In this way, it creates fearful conditions due to inadequate or excessive rainfall. Of course, we have that word in English, mercurial. Does everybody know what that means? Changes, you know, just if you, someone is very mercurial, I know people who are mercurial. They change things every day. You know, it's like very traumatic to be with them. They're very mercurial. You don't know what to expect the next day. And also, there's a substance, one of the elements, that's named after Mercury. What element is it? That's very easy. Because mercury is mercurial. It expands and contracts very, very quickly. That's why they put it in what? Thermometers. So you measure temperature utilizing mercury. And it's poisonous too. So text 14. Ata urdvam angarakopi yojana laksha dvittya Upalavya mauna strivi trivi strivi pokshar ekakasho rashin dwadashanu bhunte yadina avakrina divartute prayana shubha graho grahoga samsam. Situated 1,600,000 miles above Mercury, or 8,800,000 miles above Earth, is the planet Mars. If this planet does not travel in a crooked way, it crosses through each sign of the zodiac in 3/4 nights, and in this way travels through all 12, one after another. It almost always creates unfavorable conditions in respect to rainfall and other influences. Also, it's, you know, if it's in the house of your bodily health, it also creates health problems too. Alright, next we're going to read about one of my favorite planets. Text 15. Tata uparashta dvilaksha yojanantara gata bhagavan brahaspatir ekhaskasmin rasha parivatsaram parivatsaram charati yadi navakrashat prayena kulo brahmana kulasya. Situated 1,600,000 miles above Mars, or 10,400,000 miles above Earth, is the planet Jupiter, which travels through one sign of the zodiac within the period of Parivatsara. If its movement is not curved, the planet Jupiter is very favorable to the brahmanas of the universe. What's another name for Jupiter? Brihaspati. But that Jupiter. Anyone else have an idea? Guru. It's the guru. It's the house that indicates the guru. So, for example, if you have Jupiter in the first house, that's actually quite. First house, we're talking about the rising sign of Taurus. We're not talking about house, we're talking about rising sign. Lagna. So if you have Jupiter in the first house, along with Sagittarius, that's extremely auspicious for spiritual life. Extremely auspicious. But, you know, if Jupiter is aspected with Mercury in the wrong way, then the relationship with spiritual life and the guru is not so stable. You know? I'm not encouraging everybody to go look at their horoscope after class. Because if you chant Hare Krishna, it can take care of everything. But generally you would look, if you were trying to figure out who should take sannyas, for example, you would look at someone's horoscope, and you'd look at Jupiter and then also Sagittarius. Does anybody know what Sagittarius is? How is Sagittarius depicted? An archer. He's an archer. So archer means like Arjuna, aka Kuru Nandana. Like Arjuna, you know, the test that Arjuna had with the eye of the bird. And he was asked by Drona, along with all the other students, Drona asked, when he asked them to focus or to get ready to fire an arrow at the ivory bird, and the tree was actually not a real bird, it was like a dummy bird. Arjuna was the only one who said that he didn't see anything except for the eye. You understand? And all the other personalities, they saw other things. They saw the teacher, they saw the tree, they saw the bird, but Arjuna just saw the eye. So this is a very interesting indication for us as to how we should execute Krishna consciousness. You know, okay, how to remember that one point to see the goal and the methodology of performing Krishna consciousness. So therefore Sagittarius is extremely important and Jupiter is extremely important. That's what you look for when you're determining our sannyas minister, Pallad Nanda Maharaj. Anyone met Pallad Nanda Maharaj here? He has a PDA, which for those of you who don't know what that means, a personal digital assistant. That's not a person. Like that. And he keeps everybody's horoscopes in them. And he's so intelligent, such an intelligent person, that he actually has everyone's horoscope memorized as far as the leaders of the movement. So, you know, when I need to know something, I just call him up and say, Maharaj, what's happening for me today? In other words, he's the sannyas minister. So he can ascertain whether someone is fit for sannyas. Of course, that's not the only standard. I mean, obviously one has to have bhakti chastri, one has to not be married. I mean, there's all sorts of not having girlfriends. I mean, there's all sorts of different other restrictions too. But he definitely looks at that. I mean, like one year he told me, he said, this is going to be very austere year for you. And of course, that's the year I changed my diet and I became healthier. So it was austere in the sense of diet. It wasn't necessarily bad. It was a good year. But, you know, he could see that, oh, you're going to execute many austerities or it's going to be very austere. And it was favorable. So for a devotee, even unfavorable influences become favorable. I mean, for example, now we're going to read about Saturn. Let's read about Saturn first, and I'll talk about Saturn. So, tata, this is text 16. Tata aparishta yojana laksha dvayat pratiyamanaha ashainaishchara ekakasmin rasyotrimshan masan vilamba manaha sahavan nevanu paryeti tavadbir anuvatsarahe prahenahi sarvesham ashantikaraha. Situated 1,600,000 miles above Jupiter, or 12 million miles, above Earth, is the planet Saturn, which passes through one sign of the zodiac in 30 months and covers the entire zodiac circle in 30 anuvatsaras. This planet is always very inauspicious for the universal situation. So generally Saturn is considered inauspicious. But in many cases, it's actually auspicious for the individual. I mean, for example, if someone... Anyway, I don't know if I should say this. But if someone has Saturn in the house that deals with household affairs, then it's auspicious because he can become renounced very, very quickly. Or if he keeps trying, we see this sometimes with someone who keeps trying to enjoy that particular situation when that Saturn is in the house, and they continually get frustrated. You understand? So it's important to see which house Saturn is in. And Saturn can also help you become detached from this material world. What is that? Yashaham anugruna mehuri sheta dinam shanai. And sometimes devotees use Saturn as an excuse not to be Krishna conscious. Saturn is actually auspicious for Krishna consciousness because it's auspicious for detachment from the material world. And they say, I am going through my Saturn period. Did you ever hear that before? there's a period in everybody's life, you know, Asha, that in everybody's life where they have like usually a few years, it differs according to the situation of planets. It can be as much as 11 years of what's it called, Sunny Sada or something like that, where they go through a Saturn period. And some devotees, they get so much into their horoscope that it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy that they let Saturn, or they let the consciousness of their Saturn period affect their spiritual life. But Saturn is actually quite auspicious for spiritual life, as I mentioned before. It's not inauspicious, because it helps one become detached from this material world. Like, there was an interesting book written by one of our devotees in ISKCON, How to Ruin Your Life with Astrology. And I can send you a copy. I have it in an e-format if anyone's interested in reading it. Yeah, just send me an email. And most of the stories, of course, in that book deal with how astrologers have ruined people's household life. You know, sometimes a devotee or, you know, non-devotee, whatever, will go, they're having some arguments with their husband or wife, and they'll go to the astrologer, and the astrologer will say to them, I can see this is completely incompatible, and I can see that in the future you're just going to leave this creep anyway, and in the future you're going to get remarried. And so that puts the idea in the person's mind. It's called a self-fulfilling prophecy. And then what happens is that it happens. And the person's not happy in their new marriage situation because they've done something adharmic. You understand? So the astrologers have ruined many people. If anyone's interested in the subject matter, I can send them the book. I mean, it's quite an interesting book. It's not a funny book. It's quite an interesting book. And so one has to be very careful about dealing with astrologers because it can predispose you to certain things or put you in anxiety about certain things. I mean, for example, a number of years ago, it was predicted that I was going to die when I was 55 years old. A number of astrologers said, you know, that's it, curtains for you, Maharaj. So I was, I don't know if I got an anxiety, but I was sort of counting down the days to 55. And yeah, maybe it was in my horoscope, and it was, because the astrologers definitely saw it. But because I'm chanting Hare Krishna, I counted down the days, and I said, you know, one day came up 55, 55th birthday, and I said, you know, time, Krishna, take me away. You know. I'm yours, you know. Take me away from this miserable place, you know, no more anxieties, no more worries about money, no more telephone calls. And Krishna didn't do it. And now it's 10 years later. What am I going to do about it? So it didn't work. Even though that's what the horoscope said. So therefore we don't... even when Prabhupada was getting ready to leave this world, he said, let's hear what the astrologers say. Let's have a good laugh or whatever. I'm paraphrasing Prabhupada's words. So we don't really get into it that much. I mean, I've been reading some astrological forecasts, even for the world, sometimes by some of our expert astrologers in ISKCON, and they predict things and the things don't happen. You know, sometimes there's a comet, which is inauspicious, and they say, well, this is the next world war is going to start, and it didn't. And so, anyway, they may be expert, they may not be expert, but there's another factor going on, which is the chanting of the Lord's holy names that's helping and saving this planet. Krishna consciousness is becoming more and more prominent on the planet. In certain countries, like India, it's very prominent. Fiji, it's very prominent. Eastern Europe, it's very prominent. And America, it will become very prominent if we can institute what is Krishna West. Krishna for Dummies. You know, you see this book, you know, Internet for Dummies. And so, you know, so
Don't quote me on that. Anyway, so no, but I mean, it's interesting that a devotee has to become expert in presenting Krishna consciousness according to time, place, and circumstance. And I was, as everybody knows, I'm doing a lot of study in Christian history because there's a lot of parallels. A lot of parallels. I mean, even if you look at the Gnostics in Christian history, many of them had similar philosophies to our philosophy. There were many similarities, of course, not all the same. So what happened in Christianity, that it really started to spread with someone called Paul. You've heard of Paul before? His original name was Saul, and then he got initiated. No, he took a Latin name, Paul. So what he did is he sort of eliminated a lot of the external stuff in the Jewish religion. Because actually there were heathens who were taking to Judaism, who were very attracted. They called them the pious people. The Jews called them the pious people because they were attracted and even started to do such things as circumcision and follow the laws of kosher and everything like that. But it was a major impediment to do all these things. You know, all the Jewish rituals, especially circumcision. So it's a major impediment. And so he basically, you know, I don't want to say dumbed it down, but he sort of reduced all the different rituals and the external things. And of course, I think he did too much because he actually came to the point you just have to have faith and then you're going to be saved. But then he didn't have like the chanting anymore. He eliminated chanting japa. So I think he reduced it a little bit too much. But that's when Christianity really spread, isn't it? When he was able to present something that was socially acceptable. Because if I was to say, you know, you become a Christian, you have to dress like Jesus, or you dress like a Jew, or, you know, wear a yarmulke all the time, and have these little sideburns coming out. I mean, if that was a requirement to become a Christian, I don't think that they would make so many Christians, would they? As many as they're making today. As many as they have today. So, anyway, a little advertisement for Krishna was there. So, take the reading, finish the chapter. Don't worry. We're not going to show up in short shorts for the morning program. So text 17, we'll finish the chapter, text 17. Tata utarasman rishaya ikadasha laksha yojanam tada upalabhyante yagiva lokanam sham anubhavayanto bhagavato vishnur yat paramam padam pradakshinam Ramanti, situated 8,800,000 miles above Saturn, or 20,800,000 miles above Earth, are the seven saintly sages who are always thinking of the well-being of the inhabitants of the universe. They circumambulate the supreme abode of Lord Vishnu, known as Dhruvaloka, the pole star. So, Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that Srila Madhvacharya quotes the following verse from the Brahmanda Purana. Jnanandatmano Vishnu Shushumara Vapushyata Urnvalokeshu Savyapta Adityadhastad Ashuta. Lord Vishnu, who is the source of knowledge and transcendental bliss, has assumed the form of Shushumara in the seventh heaven. Oh, there's the seventh heaven again. That's also a very Christian statement, isn't it? Seventh heaven. Which is, that actually comes from the Gnostics. And that's, the word Gnostic is coming from the word jnana in Sanskrit. Jnana, Gnostic, and also knowledge in English. So, you could see actually many Christian concepts came from the Vedic literatures, which is situated in the topmost level of the universe. All the other planets, beginning with the sun, exist under the shelter of this Shishumara planetary system. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the fifth canto, 22nd chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Orbits of the Planets.
so that's all we have time for. Any questions? We have about 1 minute left. The class. Yeah. Yeah.
And it was speaking that Paul said pray without ceasing. And because of that, he did the whole Jesus prayer and everything. So when he said the image of the Japa...
Well, the Japa doesn't really... That's in that book, but in the Bible, I mean, in the epistles at least, there's not a lot of indication to do the Jesus prayer. There's no indication in the epistles, which are the... which are the instructions of Paul to the congregation. You know, epistles means letters, basically. That Paul would write letters to his different congregations. You know, he preached... Actually, he left Jerusalem because, you know, people didn't appreciate him so much. Because he was saying, you know, get rid of all these different rituals that are actually not attracting people to Christianity. So basically, it was Krishna's desire... Oh, you can say it was Krishna's desire that he left, because that enabled him to spread Christianity all over Krishna consciousness.
He inherited Christianity from, you know, in the Roman world.
Yeah.
The Jews had a very low status.
Yeah.
And no, one of them were Greek. Well, if you're a Christian, you've got to become a Jew first.
They would never do it.
Yeah. So he said, well, you don't have to do that.
You don't have to do that.
So he said, I'll begin the Roman Catholic Church then.
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't want to become, with all the external stuff, becoming a Jew, you know. So, I mean, I'm sure he prayed. But but there was no indication that they did kirtan. That was the point I was making. I'm sure, I mean, the holy rollers came later on. Paul wasn't one of the holy rollers. He was rather conservative. Very conservative because
he listened to Bart Ehrman.
Yeah.
Bart Ehrman. I took his New Testament
book. Oh, you did? You took it online or?
No, in person.
Oh, in person? Oh, yeah. Well, I have that course as DVDs if anyone's interested.